Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All. Less work, more clean. Terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Tinder. You matched, chatted, vibe checked. Now it's time to meet IRL. So, what's stopping you? Tinder is making dating safer and easier with their excellent safety features, like Share My Date, the best way to let your friends know your plans, while Moonlight allows you to discreetly call emergency services, and Are You Sure will prompt people to think twice before sending a potentially harmful message. Explore all of the possibilities for yourself. It starts with a swipe. Download Tinder today.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Welcome to the Bike Radar Podcast, brought to you by the team behind BikeRadar.com, Cycling Plus and MBUK magazines. If you enjoy this episode, please subscribe. And if you can do so, leave us a rating on your podcast provider of choice. It really helps us reach other cyclists like you.
Hello and welcome to the Bike Radar Podcast. I'm Jack Luke, and today we will be talking about Bike of the Year. Bike of the Year is our industry-leading megatest to deliver a verdict on the year's best road and mountain bikes. Now more than a decade old and ran by Bike Radar in conjunction with our colleagues at Cycling Plus and MBUK magazines, this year we have tested dozens of bikes over 8 categories to bring you a summary of the very best bikes money can buy. In this episode of the podcast, I'm joined by Simon Von Bromley and Warren Roster, two key members of our road testing team, to talk through the winning bikes in the road and gravel categories. We're going to kick things off by going through how we tested with both Simon and Warren, talking a little bit about our additional categories this year, and then revealing the big winners overall and in our performance category. Warren, how are you today and how has this year's Bike of the Year gone for you?
I'm all good, thanks, Jack. And yeah, the testing's been really interesting, actually. Obviously, I think this year, more than any, been faced with some epic challenges, not only in the kind of price crunch that, you know, we've all read so much about, but also in just sheer availability, because there's been not only a lack of product, there's also been increased demand. So it, like, just getting hold of bikes has been a big challenge.
Even for titans of the industry, such as yourself.
Well, I guess, yeah, pretty much. I guess when you're contacting the brands and saying, we really want to test these bikes, and they go, oh, sorry, we've sold them all.
There's not really much need in selling them, us them, is there? So, you took the kind of lead in our gravel bike categories as well. Am I right in saying the endurance bike category as well?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And how have you enjoyed this year's testing? Give us a little flavour for the riding that you indulged in over the last couple of months. And in fact, that's a good point. When did you start testing for Bike of the Year?
Probably the first bikes that I got in doing were probably back in last September, I would have thought.
Wow.
So it's a fairly long process. You know, you need to ride all the bikes and ride them again and again and again. And then lots of back-to-back testing. I mean, just to give you an outline on endurance bikes, the way I normally sort of test this, and, you know, having done it for probably over a decade now, the bikes come in, they'll go through our mechanic, Will's hands, you know, fully check them over, get them set up and ready to go. And then, you know, they'll come over to me. And first off, I just like to go out on a, you know, a nice, good, high-tempo ride on each bike, probably for, you know, 2.5 hours, just see how it feels, make sure I can get any adjustments and any setup differences that, you know, I want to make. And then you get into, like, the bulk of the testing, and I've been using the same sort of test route back where I live in Wiltshire. Mm-hmm. Which is about 132K and every bike gets ridden on that route more than once. And I'll do it forwards and reverse, et cetera, et cetera. And once I've done all that on every bike, then I'll start whittling down which ones I think are the better ones and keep doing it. I think on the endurance bike testing this year, I've notched up over 1,200 miles, getting over 2,000 kilometres just on the endurance category.
Dear me, and what was the top cafe stop amongst your favourite 130-kilometre loop?
It's usually the same place, which is a farm shop in a place called Eddington, next to a really nice pub called the Three Daggers, who have their own brewery.
Nice, so many pints and coffees drinking in this.
Not many pints, but, you can actually have a coffee in this sort of brewery area, so you can smell the beer rather than drink it.
Almost as good. Before we go into the other categories, Simon, you've headed up our performance bike testing, so give us a flavour for, you know, what that category entails and what testing you've done.
So performance, the performance road bike category is, as name suggests, it's all kind of high-end road bikes. So I've been very lucky enough to ride a load of sort of £6,000 to £8,500 bikes over the last few months, which has all been very exciting. And I think, like Warren, you know, my test loops tend to go over very, very familiar terrain. I think, you know, I can't attest to having test loops quite as long as as Warren's, but I tend to take in familiar climbs, familiar descents, familiar roads. So you can kind of, you know, you're testing those bikes on roads that, you know, you're very comfortable with. You know how a bike typically goes down that hill or up that hill or, you know, across that kind of exposed section of road. And then so when you take a new bike on there, you know, the differences become a bit more apparent. You're not worrying about kind of, you know, which direction you're going, that sort of thing. So, yeah, lots of being out on nice posh carbon road bikes with the latest electronic group sets and carbon wheels. You know, it's a tough job.
Yeah, it just sounds absolutely appalling. Yes. And for you, Simon, did you have any delicious cafe stops or were we more focused on pocket snacks?
They're more focused on pocket snacks. And actually, one thing that I have really gotten into during my testing is those little Belgian sugar waffles.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, those are a real good snack. I probably should be riding 130K if I'm eating those on the bike.
Some nice empty white carbs and sugar. Lovely. Well, the testing hasn't been limited to just these two. We have, of course, got our mountain bike categories, and you can listen to all about those in a previous episode of the Bike Radar podcast. But Warren, we also have some additional categories which have been handled by friends of Bike Radar. Do you want to outline those?
Yeah, I mean, we did a women's bike test where we were actually looking at the women specific models that are out there. And Catherine, who's just handled, I think, all of our gravel podcasting, took that on. And I've had lots of really good long conversations with her about bikes that she rode and what she enjoyed about them. She's really interesting. And then on the budget side, it was Simon Withers, who tends to be our sort of value packed expert, I would say.
That's a really wonderful affectation. I'm sure he'll appreciate that. Is it? To be fair, he has tested a lot of cheap bikes in his time, lots of touring bikes as well. He definitely knows his way around the budget model.
He definitely does. And, you know, I was chatting with Simon about sort of the way he was testing those bikes, which is probably a very different approach to, you know, Simon heading out on performance bikes or me, you know, heading out onto gravel or big endurance miles. And Simon sort of was talking about how these are bikes that you're more likely to live with. So he was using them for commuting and running errands and, you know, weekend rides and that sort of thing. And so, I think, again, he came away impressed this year with just how good budget bikes are getting.
Yes. Yes. And, you know, obviously you can get all the details on bikeradar.com, but if you want the full print in hand experience, what issue of Cycling Plus can our delightful listeners read about these in?
It's issue 393, which I'm terrible on sale dates. I tend to work so far ahead.
On sale now-ish.
On sale now-ish, depending on when this goes out. On sale middle of May.
Middle of May. Yeah. Wonderful, yeah. We'll be out by then. Well, do get that. It's always lovely to have the paper copy. But if you can't get that where you're listening, of course, everything will be on Bike Radar. Okay, now, we're not going to keep you in suspense any longer. Warren, you've made a very controversial choice for this year's overall winner for the road bike category. What is it?
You know, you say I've made this choice. It was a collaborative.
It was
a collaborative effort, and we did, we did have meetings and chats about it, both in person and across teams. And actually, I mean, for the first time ever, we've actually gone with a gravel bike.
Gravel bike for the overall road category. We're going to let that sink in. A sign of the times. And what is that bike, Warren?
The bike is Giant's Revolt Advanced Pro Zero.
A bike that was recently-ish updated.
Yeah. It's new for 2022. And I would say, you know, the 2021 version I thought was brilliant. I really, really liked. I mean, I, in fact, encouraged a staff member on Cycling Plus who was looking for a gravel bike to get one. And just before they replaced it, obviously.
Life is a highway. And on it, there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
This episode is brought to you by Azo. Ever felt off balance down there? Introducing Azo Vaginal Health Products. Azo Complete Feminine Balance helps restore the balance of good bacteria. And if you want protection from yeast and urinary tract issues, try Azo Dual Protection. Save 20% with the promo code PODCAST at azoproducts.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
After countless steps and more than a few miles, your dog drives you forward one last time to make that final climb. And as the rising sun peeks out from the horizon, you know, incredible happens here because it starts here with the fuel that makes it all possible, Pro Plan Sport. Discover advanced nutrition made to fuel strength and stamina in active dogs like yours at ProPlansport.com.
But for the 2022 one, it's like any of the small niggles I had with the old version, they've just addressed. Mm. It's almost like they were listening to my conversations.
Maybe.
It's very weird. So you've got a new chassis that's 200 grams lighter than the old one. A significant amount of weight to lose. You know, to put that in context, the bike that I tested, which was a large, so the equivalent lock of 58 centimetre, was 8.3 kilos.
And that's with a GRX DI2 group set, quite fancy carbon wheels, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, it's got Giant CXR1 carbon wheels on it. But to make an 8.3 kilo bike with 40C tires is pretty impressive stuff. I mean, it's lighter than quite a few of the endurance bikes that I was testing.
I was going to say, it's not madly expensive either, is it?
No.
Like, typically, Giant is quite good value. So even though, as you say, it does come with, you know, electronic gears and fancy components, compared to some of the other bikes on the market that come with similar components, it's actually quite well priced.
Yeah. I mean, against some of its rivals in that category, it's sort of between £500 and £800 cheaper.
That is a lot.
And it's lighter. And it's got a better group set.
Yeah.
And you're just kind of, you know, it's one of those things where you're kind of trying to work out how they're doing it.
Mm. We'll come on to the group set in a minute because I read an interesting line on that from you. But, you know, to choose a gravel bike compared to an endurance bike or over an endurance bike, rather, I think asks quite an interesting question of the point of an endurance bike. I mean, given you were riding the two categories back to back, do you think there's still space for a endurance bike in everyone's stable, or is a gravel bike really what you should be buying?
I think there's a very strange world of convergence going on.
Mm.
You know, if I take in like the gravel category, there was one bike in there which I was really impressed by, and that's Vielo's V+1,
mm-hmm.
which is very much a kind of stripped down, almost kind of racing gravel bike, but the geometry is quite close to an endurance bike, and it rides with a real kind of sporty speed and handling on the road. So it's like this gravel bike is coming way, way over towards endurance. And then when you look at some of the bikes in endurance category, I mean, the things like the Cannondale's new Synapse, which is obviously the first Synapse since the Synapse began that doesn't bear a UCI regulation sticker, because they haven't made it for racers, they've made it for normal people. That seems to be pushing into that kind of gravel adjacent, gravel affiliated sort of bike. Mm-hmm. So you're ending up with these two different genres of bike that are actually converging in quite an interesting ways. So I do think there's definitely a place for it, because mm-hmm. I fully believe that, you know, most people riding a road bike probably aspire to owning a super high-end performance bike, you know, the sort of thing you're going to see ridden in the Tour. But most of those people have been much better off on an endurance bike,
mm-hmm.
you know, because you're just getting a much more usable experience. You're getting a bike that's just brings comfort over stiffness and lightness. And so it would just be a better bike to live with day to day.
I know one particular highlight with the Revolt, you described the Shimano GRX Di2 group set as criminally underspecced on other bikes. You know, talk about that a bit, because I can't help but agree.
Well, I think it's in this guise as well, because it's the 2x version of GRX Di2. Now, I'm a big fan of GRX Di2. I mean, you know, there's been lots of stuff that I did on Bike Radar around the launch of it. You know, I think the braking is absolutely exceptional. The way that they've reshaped the levers to make the braking from the hoods almost indistinguishable from braking in the drops just works so well on gravel, but it also works remarkably well on the road. And then actually having a 2x opens up the Revolt to lots more beyond just pure gravel. You know, some people might sort of decry maybe, you know, the gearing, because it's a 48-31
mm-hmm.
With an 11-34 cassette. That's pretty decent on the road. You know, 48-11, it enabled me to keep up with you know, some of my roadie mates when I was out on rides, and not feel hampered or, but you've got this much smoother spread through a much wider range of gearing. So it doesn't feel too much of a disadvantage on the road, and it works exceptionally well off it.
Mm. Any other highlights from that bike that kind of pushed it, apart from the kind of spec and the value, what else kind of elevated it ahead of the others on test?
I just think really that it just balances impeccable comfort and a kind of smoothness both on and off road. But it's got handling more akin to a road bike than it has to a, you know, kind of slacked out, you know, gravel bike. And it wasn't really any terrain that I threw it at that I thought, oh, it's getting a bit out of its depth here. And I think, you know, it's got decent versatility to it. You know, going back to the improvements they made over the old one, you know, things like much bigger tire clearances, much lower weight. And one of the criticisms I did have on the old one, which I know is a bit divisive, but I do like a dropper post on a gravel bike, but mainly because a lot of the gravel riding I do will take in quite a few kind of mountain bike single track trails and a bit of, you know, a bit of downhill type antics, and just being able to shift the saddle out of the way and just, you know, make yourself better centered on the bike is fantastic. But on the old Revolt, because it uses Giant's D-shaped posts, which does offer lots of compliance and comfort, you couldn't do.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the new one still comes with a D-post, but the seat binder arrangement is actually an adapter.
It's quite clever, that, I have to say. It's like genuinely a clever... It's like a... almost like a standard integrated seat clamp, but it does essentially take up the space that a D-shaped post would take up.
Yeah, so you take that out and you can put a 27.2 standard post in there around a dropper, and it's rooted for droppers as well. So it just seems to be such a very, very well thought out bike, which I guess is something Giant very good at.
Do make bloody good bikes, the old Giant, have to say. Two TCR owners actually in the room next to me when I think about it. Both, a pair of you, both own your own fair TCR. There you go. Okay, Simon, moving away from the gravel world, we're into the uncompromising Bromley, the perfect category for a man such as yourself. What has won your category and why?
The winner of the Performance Road category Bike of the Year 2022 is the Merida Sculptura team.
Mm-hmm.
And it won that category because it's just an incredibly well put together, fast, good value, you know, kind of world tour spec bike. And, it kind of impressed me everywhere. It was really, really difficult to fault it. The only thing that I could, you know, I had to nitpick.
It's your job, mate.
Which I love to do. But yeah, it comes with an integrated cockpit, and that integrated cockpit is only available in sort of three sizes. So three combination of, you know, stem length and bar width. So you can have short and narrow, medium and long and wide, which for me is no good. But, you know, it runs on a kind of typical FSA integrated headset system. So, you know, you replace that, if you were as sad as me and you care about those extra centimeters at the cockpit. But apart from that, you know, it's got the new Dura Ace 12-speed group set with a power meter, Vision 45mm tubeless ready carbon wheels, you know, the kind of top spec version of them. It's, you know, improved aerodynamics over the previous version. And in a kind of age where bike prices are, you know, at that end of the market are kind of pushing.
Bonkers.
Yeah, they're just getting, you know, if you wanted a world tour spec road bike from, you know, any of the kind of really big name brands, you know, you're looking at £10,000 plus these days, whereas the Merida comes in at less than 8K. And then obviously that's still incredibly expensive. It is not money I would ever spend on a bike, but at that end of the market.
Yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? I mean, yeah. I mean, I rode that bike at its launch and like it was just like wildly impressed that it's just fabulously balanced. It's not too edgy in its handling. It's really, you know, it's remarkably smooth for such a light bike. Mm-hmm. But talking about value seems odd when you're talking about a bike.
An eight grand bike. Yeah.
But it's phenomenally good value when you compare it to, you know, the real big players in the market. We're talking, you know, in most part, probably £4,000 cheaper.
Yeah, even if you were shopping with a kind of direct sales brand like Canyon, you know, they have an equivalently spec'd Ultimate CFR, and it doesn't come with the Dura-Ace power meter.
Which is what, £1,000-ish pounds over the standard?
And obviously you can buy cheaper power meters and whatever, but, you know, if you want
matches.
If you want that matching integrated power meter. So yeah, just a really fun bike to ride, and you know, it goes uphill really well. It goes downhill really well, as you know, Matej Mohoric showed. It's also dropper post compatible. if that's your kind of
that
cup of tea,
pickle, yeah.
Well, you know, it's one of those things. You know, when we had this conversation, like, are dropper posts going to take over? Well, you need a bike with a round seat post, and you know, that was one of the things I liked about the Merida was the fact that it uses a round seat post, so you can change it out if it's, you know, if the one that comes with it isn't what you wanted. The same with the integrated handlebar, like if you don't like it, it uses a standard round steerer, so you don't have to.
And actually,
use it.
Yeah, I like the fact that it does come with a one piece integrated bar, but most of its rivals do as well. But Merida haven't gone down that rabbit hole of a proprietary dedicated system. Mm-hmm. They're using FSA's ACR, which, you know, FSA make a multitude of stems which aren't integrated and everything.
Exactly.
So it's really, really, it's adaptable. You know. You know, I know you, Simon. You have very, very particular about your bar.
Yeah, more so than most people.
More so than most people. But you know, the one I rode, it was kind of, it was pretty much bang on for what I needed. You know, it had like the it was a large, an XL bike, so like a 58, and had the equivalent of probably like a 110, 120 stem on it, and the bar width was just slightly narrower than a 42.
Yeah,
so it was actually a little bit, you know, probably a little bit narrower than what I would
usually
use, and I didn't. You know, and I was sort of...
And for most people, it will be. And I think that's where Merida is saving money. You know, if you buy a Pinarello, their kind of most Talon integrated bar has kind of 28 combinations of sizes. But then, you know, if you buy a Dogma F, that costs you 14, maybe 12, maybe £14,000, depending on which spec
you get. With equivalent spec, yeah.
So that's the kind of area. But like for me, that's, that's a compromise that's absolutely fine. Because as you say, most people, the sizing of it is going to be absolutely fine. You know, if you need to make a little bit of reach adjustments, obviously you can always play with the saddle position if that's something you're comfortable with doing. And if not, as Warren says, you know, it uses a kind of standard FSA system, a standard round steerer tube. So, you know, you have room to swap it out for something else if you want to. You know, on top of that, it's got great tire clearance, room for up for 32C tires, gives you, you know, heaps of versatility. It is the only thing I perhaps didn't like was maybe the paint job, but again, you know.
Brilliant. But it is available in black.
It is available in black as well. So, and that's obviously
always
going to be subjective.
I do think in the colorway that we had it, it should have shipped with a Sharpie as well. So you could color some bits in.
Yes. Just a final question. I can't believe I'm choosing to ask you this. This is supposed to be a brief podcast, but you're a big fan of the Reactor, which is Merida's aero bike. I'm just curious to hear how you think the Sculptura compared to it. And, you know, I know you would probably buy the Reactor, Simon, as you are an aero man, but, you know, how do the two compare essentially in terms of ride quality?
So in terms of ride quality, I think the Sculptura is slightly more comfortable, and that just probably comes down to the fact that it just has smaller tubes. And so, inevitably, smaller seat stays, are going to flex a little bit more, even under, you know, someone who weighs as little as I do. But in terms of handling and stuff, actually, they, you know, they're both quite similar. I think they have similar geometry. Yeah, pretty much identical geometry, in fact. And so they handle very similarly. Now, for me, I would take the aero bike because, you know, I believe that's the faster bike. But there are a lot of people, and, you know, we see it in the World Tour, that most of the riders choose to ride that kind of lightweight all-rounder, you know, slash aero road bike. And that's the kind of design that, you know, Specialized and Trek and a lot of the other big brands are kind of settling on, is that rather than a pure dedicated road bike like the Reacto or the Madone or, you know, the Venge as it used to be, this kind of lightweight all-rounder road bike that enables you, you know, basically to be fast on kind of all terrain, whether it's up mountains, down mountains, you know, in the valley, blah, blah, blah. I can see why that makes sense. Whereas, you know, if you get an aero bike with 60 millimeter wheels, you know, that is going to feel kind of sluggish if you take it to the Alps. And then, you know, when you're coming down those mountains, those really deep wheels might be a bit of a handful.
Yes.
So, yeah, it's that kind of thing. If the weight gain of an aero bike concerns you, but you still really want a fast bike, then these lightweight all-rounder bikes, you know, with their kind of aero detailing, integrated cockpits and, you know, hidden cables and all those things, you know, they are still incredibly fast.
Final question, actually, and I'll come back to you, Warren, ask the same, but any other kind of highlights from your testing from that category that you particularly enjoyed?
Yeah, I really enjoyed testing the Lapierre Zelius SL, and that's Lapierre's a brand that I hadn't ridden before. And it's got a kind of interesting design where the seat stays past the seat tube and meet the top tube, which gives it a really nice kind of comfortable ride feel without the kind of rear end feeling like disconnected or at all. That was a really fast bike. And one of the comments that Lapierre made when they launched the bike was that they'd updated the handling to be faster, and you could really feel it. It was a very reactive bike. And I quite enjoyed that. But it isn't a bike that I would recommend to someone who didn't want a race bike.
Yeah.
So that made it kind of like, obviously it's a performance road category. And so, you know, it scored very well within that category, but it makes it hard to recommend to anyone. You know, if you're not racing, do you need a bike that's like that reactive? I don't know. And I think for most people, they'd probably be better off on the Merida, which is a slightly calmer bike. But it was also great. It looked really nice, had a beautiful paint job.
Very
it looked,
cool.
Looked very different, doesn't have the kind of, you know, normal drop seat stays look that every bike in inverted commas has these days. So yeah, that was a bit of a highlight as well.
Lovely. And for you, Warren, what about other kind of highlights within the categories you were responsible for?
I think I'm kind of becoming a really big fan of the new Synapse. Mainly because I think it's a bit of an outlier and it's stepped away from the norm. You know, I think now they've introduced the, you know, the bike that we had in for the Endurance Bike of the Year was the Limited RLE. And it's a really interesting bike because on the one side, it's got not 45 aero wheels, which are, you know, lovely, and it's got a beautiful build. But then it's got a 2x GRX DI2 group on it, which is kind of quite interesting. And then the tyres on it, I've got a little bit of grip, but they're not gravel tyres. So it's pushed itself away from what the Synapse used to be, which was basically
comfy, squishy road bike.
Well, it was a comfortable version of the Evo. That's basically what it was, but it was still being raced. You know, Ravelgem was worn on a Synapse. You know, Sagan got sixth at Paris-Roubaix riding a Synapse, and now this new one has just gone so far away from racing, but it's brought in some really interesting new ideas into a category that I think does need a bit of a shake up. You know. Because the endurance category, because it's basically being attacked on one side by performance gravel bikes, and then as we've just been saying, you know, lightweight race bikes are getting more comfortable. So it's kind of being squeezed by both sides. So I think it needs to evolve to remain valid. And I think that the RLE one, you know, it's got a built-in Garmin radar, it's got integrated lights front and rear, one central battery. So it just kind of takes all these kind of cues from other areas. You know, it's got more fixtures and fittings than before. It's a bike that is almost a wish list of the things that you might want to put on that bike to live with it day to day.
Seems like the ultimate Audaxing bike.
Yes, exactly. Yeah,
Yeah. Just to get a pair of matching carbon mudguards to complement your nice carbon bike, yes. do you think the kind of radar light system, do you think it'll last the test of time? Will it be something that's adopted by other brands? Do you think it's a bit of a flash in the pan idea?
I think as a first step, mm-hmm. it's a really interesting idea. Because I've had time now to sort of, you know, live with it and use it. And where initially I thought, well, what if I want to choose my own lights? You know, and the lights on it are perfectly good. But I do think everything being integrated, it means you're not left with all this clutter. You don't end up, you know, when the spring and summer comes around, the nights draw out, taking your lights off, putting them in a drawer, and then getting to next winter and going, where's the other half of this bracket? Where mm-hmm. these, you know, I've got a drawer in my, you know, in my workshop at home that's just full of
half lights.
Yeah, you know. I mean, I've got a pot by my back door, which is all old bike lights that I just use as torches at night for walking the dog mm-hmm. because I haven't got the brackets for them anymore. But it seems, you know, wasteful to throw them away. So, and having one central battery that charges everything, it just makes everything so much easier. You haven't yep. got to remember to, you know, charge this, charge that, take this off, put that off. I don't think it's perfect yet. I think, you know, as battery technology increases, as the light technology increases, the ones that we're getting in the UK at the minute are STVO compliant. So they don't have the battery life for big, big rides. You'll get about 4 hours out of them. Mm. But if it had the international system where you can run flash mode or whatever, then yes. you can get 30 plus hours of life out of them. But because these lights have got to be on, you know, with the ST compliance, they're just on all the time. There's not a lot you can do about it. But I think as a first step of doing something a bit different, I think it's bold, and I hope it's successful.
Yeah, the dynamo botherers amongst us, myself included, we kind of went, well, you know, already had integrated lights for some time. But yes, it's a cool system. And I mentioned it in a previous podcast, but I used the radar system as a standalone thing. I have to say, it's very good in some circumstances.
I really like it. I mean, just for that kind of urban and suburban riding, when you want to pull out and turn right so that you don't have to keep looking over your shoulder for somebody to come in, it's just telling you.
I find it quite annoying in urban riding. I find it quite distracting, but in rural riding, I found it quite helpful where it would see long before I would. But anyway, discussion for another time. Bike of the year. It's pretty much rounded out. We're going to be kind of drip-feeding reviews pretty much all the way through to end of June, right into July, I think, as well. We've got a lot of bikes tested across all the categories, I think 50-plus this year. So do stay tuned to the site for all of that. And we will have all the winners announced by the time this podcast goes out. So again, head to bikeradar.com. We'll be on a botty bonanza on the homepage. Any closing thoughts from the two hardworking Bike of the Year testers for this year? Are you excited for next year already, Simon?
Yeah, I am. I hope we can. I think, like Warren says, I hope more brands say yes to us next year. But then obviously that means mm-hmm. more work. But, you know, I love my job.
Do you love testing, Warren?
Yeah, I think, you know, once the industry gets over its
trauma
and its availability woes, it will be in a much brighter place. And there are some really, really interesting bikes coming for.
Yes, it's going to be a good year ahead. Lots of tasty stuff to come. And if you want to get all of that tasty news, make sure you subscribe to the Bike Radar podcast. Give us a cheeky 5-star rating if you think we deserve it, which of course we do. And if you have any questions at all, or any queries, feedback, there will be an article accompanying this podcast on the bikeradar.com homepage where you can leave your thoughts. Simon and Warren, thank you so much. Thank you for all your hard work on Bike of the Year, and speak to you again soon.
Thanks for listening to the Bike Radar podcast. If you've not done so already, please subscribe and share with your friends, or leave us a rating if you've enjoyed this episode.